We try to eat our way out of anxieties, only to become overweight and, well, more anxious. Our expanding waistlines and our sleepless nights lead us to ask, can we eat our way to happiness?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 665th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Cairns. Or tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones.
Hello, everyone.
Well, folks, it's easy to see with a quick look around any public place that we are becoming overweight and dangerously diabetic. How overweight? The Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 67% of us are overweight and 34% of us obese. How diabetic? The Diabetics Clearinghouse estimates 7.8% of us, and that's about 24 million people, suffer from type 2 diabetes, which costs all of us about $113 billion a year. Some say the reason for all this excess weight is that we try to eat our way to happiness, only to be tricked by our taste buds, and clever merchants, of course, into eating our way into more anxieties that can only be cured by eating more food. The length of our waistlines and the extravagance of our medical bills and all of those sleepless nights begs us to ask, can we eat our way to happiness? And here to help us cook up an answer, we have Elizabeth Sommer, dietitian and author of Food and Mood and Eat Your Way to Happiness. Welcome to the Food Chain, Elizabeth. Are you there, Elizabeth?
I am here.
Oh, good.
I can hear
gotcha.
You just fine.
Good. Welcome to the Food Chain. Happy to have you aboard. Registered dietitian. What does the dietitian do anyway?
Well, lots of things. I mean, we have a four-year degree from an accredited university in nutrition and then usually do an internship and have to do yearly continuing education. And a lot of dietitians work in facilities like hospitals or school systems or nursing homes. Or I've taken my career in a different direction. I've sort of become the dietitian you go to find out about the research. I read hundreds of studies every year and then package that into news you can use, whether it's magazine articles or my monthly appearances on the Today Show, my books, such as my most recent one, Eat Your Way to Happiness.
Well, Food and Mood and Eat Your Way to Happiness suggest to me that there's more in all of this than the physical. There must be a lot of mental in there. So, like, are you half psychologist as well?
Well, no, but I have been following the research ever since the early 1990s when I published my first book on this topic, Food and Mood. And since then, people have been sharing their stories of how that book changed their lives, and it's become kind of part of the research that I follow most closely is how what we eat affects our mental, our emotional, our ability to handle stress, our sleep, our food cravings. And what I have found over the years, I find it so interesting that most people know that there's a link between what they eat and their physical health.
Right.
You know, you fail to get enough calcium, for instance, and over the course of years, you'll end up with bone loss and osteoporosis. Or people know that if they eat a lot of greasy, saturated, fat-laden foods, that over the course of years that can lead to heart disease, colon cancer, even dementia. But people don't realize that the link between what they eat and is very immediate when it comes to their mood and their memory. Literally, what you eat or don't eat for breakfast will affect how you feel mid-afternoon. And then, of course, the effects are also cumulative. You know, include the right foods in your diet for months, years, decades, and you'll be that much happier and mentally sharp in the years to come. So, in short, people that follow the advice in the book and have been doing that for years come back to me and say, I never knew I could feel this good.
Mm-hmm. So you are part psychologist then, aren't you?
Well, I've been following the research on it anyway. I'm sure my friends would say I'm part psychologist, but I don't think that's a professional degree.
Food and Mood. Are you familiar, just as a parenthetical, about the works of Dr. Steven Schoenthaler, who's a criminologist at Cal State University?
No, I'm not.
Well, he kind of like you, because he works with food and criminal intent and measures in his scientific studies the rate of criminal behavior and nutrient content of the blood flow of the body's blood, and can actually prove that the more nutrients you have in your blood relates directly to your criminal behavior. And when I saw your work, I thought, goodness, quite parallel in many respects. So let me ask you really quickly, just a yes or no, can we eat our way to happiness?
Well, the short answer is yes. The uh-huh. long answer is, you know, like an 8-hour seminar.
Right. Well,
I absolutely guarantee, like I said, that if you follow the guidelines in the book, mm-hmm. even if you don't follow them all, but you just follow some of them, that you'll notice improvements in mood, memory, how you handle stress. You know, for instance, you were bringing up the criminal side to it. There have been some fascinating studies with the omega-3 fats. With prisoners in prison, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies that have found that those criminals that are getting ample amounts of the omega-3s have a significant reduction in aggression, depression. All kinds of behavioral stuff, and that's just one nutrient. In fact, the omega-3s are fascinating because the research is so strong at this point, showing that if you get ample amounts of them, that you can reduce depression by, you know, up to 40%, even up to 50%, even in people that are the most difficult to mm-hmm. treat.
And the problem with long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, as I understand it, is that they're relatively easy to get enough. The problem is we get too much omega-6s. And it creating the imbalance that leads us to where we happen to be. Now, I wanted to ask, are there scientific studies that actually back up what you're saying, that we can eat our way to happiness?
Oh, thousands.
Thousands, then.
You won't find that the book has a note at the back of it that says that if you want the references, you go to my website, mm-hmm. and they're all posted there.
So there's actually scientific double-blind studies that say we can eat our way to happiness.
Oh, my goodness, yes, and we have thousands of studies spanning decades of research showing it. A lot of the research began probably the late 80s, you know, up until that point we were just pretty much studying heart disease and cancer and immunity and things like that. But then this whole link between what we eat and our emotional mm-hmm. and mental health started percolating in around the late 80s and early 90s, which is why I wrote the first book, Food and
Food. So this is all relatively new thinking then.
All new, but of course it makes sense. It's not like there's some sort of a brick wall between your head and your body.
Right.
You know, whatever you do to feed your heart is going to be feeding your brain as well. And so, yes, of course there's. For instance, breakfast. We have lots and lots and lots of studies that repeatedly and consistently show that people that eat breakfast have more energy, they have a more sustained good mood throughout the day, they perform better at school and work, they sleep better at night, which means they wake up the next day more energized and
breakfast,
happy.
Breakfast, if you eat a good breakfast, you can sleep better at night?
Yes.
And I noticed, of course, that one of the first element in your list of elements in what it takes to lose weight is getting a good night's sleep. So that's really important, isn't it?
Oh, of course. And studies, again, have shown that if you don't get it, if you're getting less than 7 hours of sleep a night, that increases your risk for weight gain. Not only because it probably upsets hormonal balances, but also because then if you're fatigued all day long, you're likely to start turning to food in an attempt to perk yourself up.
Hey, and why do we eat so much? What are we looking for?
Well, we have hunter-gatherer brains. You know, we evolved over millions of years in an environment where food was not necessarily scarce, but it was mm-hmm. very lean and you know, mostly vegetables with some extremely lean wild game.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to work hard to get it. You know, our
right,
ancestors
right.
ran their game to exhaustion, and we were in pretty good shape in those days. Well, you fast forward to the present, where we have the same hunter-gatherer brains, the same brain chemistry, but now junk food is on every street corner, high in fat and sugar. So we have a lot of brain chemistry to tell us to eat that stuff. No brain chemistry to tell us to eat broccoli. So it's easy, if we don't use our higher brain centers, our cortex, to put a lid on it, it's easy to overconsume, and we're not moving anymore. We're sitting at our desk in front of a computer terminal or a TV screen instead of, working the land or doing vigorous physical activity. It's no secret why Americans are getting heavy. We're eating too much and not moving enough.
And then when we get back from this break, we're going to talk about the emotional elements of eating too much, what we're looking for when we run to that snack and stuff it into our mouths, and the inner peace we're looking for in that piece of food. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you all here with us. We have Elizabeth Sommer, who is the author of Food and Mood and Eat Your Way to Happiness, and we're talking about whether it's possible and how it's possible to eat our way to happiness. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, next time you go out into public, take a quick look around, and you can see that we are all getting a little bit overweight, or not all of us, just most of us, 67% of us, and 32% of us are way overweight to the extent that we are obese. And, of course, this leads to a dangerous vulnerability to diabetes, and there are 24 million of us who are now type 2 diabetic, costing us somewhere in the neighborhood of $113 billion every year. And so how do we come to being so overweight and so diabetic? And some say the reason is that we're just trying to eat our way out of our anxieties. But others say that in that attempt, we eat so many of the wrong things. We are tricked into eating so many of the wrong things that we end up more anxious and more overweight than ever. Is that a fair summation, Elizabeth Sommer?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why we overeat. Some of them are emotional. Yes, we do eat, when we're bored, or we eat when we're angry, or we eat when we're depressed or whatever. But there's just a glut of junk food these days, and if we don't think before we shove things into our mouth, it's easy to overconsume calories. And even if it's just a few every day extra, that's enough to start packing on the pounds over the course of years.
They all count. Let's talk a little bit about, you talk about being smarter about how we eat. So in order to be smarter, let's talk a little bit about the mechanisms involved. What fascinated me when I opened up your Eat Your Way to Happiness is the relationship of food to mood and the connection with serotonin and carbohydrates and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So may we, if possible, dwell on that for a few moments so people can really get an understanding, perhaps, of how we come to crave certain foods.
Sure.
And how to get out from underneath those cravings.
Yeah, we have a lot of brain chemistry to tell us to eat carbohydrates and fat. We have no brain chemistry to tell us to eat carrots or broccoli or whatever. One of those chemicals in the brain, nerve chemicals, appetite chemicals, serotonin. I think most people have heard of serotonin. Mm-hmm. It's the nerve chemical that Prozac works on. It not only regulates mood, it also regulates our appetite. And when serotonin levels are high, you don't crave foods or don't crave carbohydrates. You're in a happy mood. Mm-hmm. You sleep better at night. Several other things.
So you eat... When your serotonin levels are high, you sleep better at night.
You sleep better at night. You you don't have cravings for carbohydrates. You're in a reasonably good mood. You even have a higher pain tolerance. Mm-hmm. But when serotonin levels drop, which is very normal, they ebb and flow throughout the day and the month and the year. But when they drop, that's when you start craving carbohydrates. That's when you're more likely to have a disrupted sleep, and your mood plummets.
So, in a quick aside then, you talked about Prozac, and a lot of the mood management drugs that we take these days, and we take a lot of them these days, are based on the management of serotonin then, correct? Is that a fair summation?
Yes.
Okay, so this serotonin's pretty significant stuff. And then,
well, it's one of many brain chemicals, but yes, at least we've been able to identify it very clearly what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is that when serotonin levels are low and you crave carbohydrates, those are the very foods that raise serotonin levels in the brain. So you literally are unconsciously self-medicating when you turn to the cookies, the cakes, the pies.
Okay, so when we get the blues or we get angry or frustrated or whatever, we can run and get a quick pick-me-up by eating some simple carbohydrates, right?
Yes, yes.
But?
The thing is you want to eat the right ones.
Okay.
You take the, the cookies, the cakes, the pies, the candies will definitely raise serotonin levels, but they also wreak havoc with your blood sugar levels. So
okay.
You end up...
This starts this interesting cycle, right, of craving. So tell us what happens when we eat those simple carbohydrates.
They raise the serotonin levels, but the blood sugar level spikes. Your pancreas spits out some insulin, a hormone that helps to regulate blood sugar levels, often overreacting and dropping them too low, which then causes you to be jittery and depressed and anxious, and so then you go back to the sugar to get, another fix, and so you ride this blood sugar roller coaster.
We can come to eat a whole bag of potato chips almost.
Easily. But you can override, you can avoid that if you turn to the right carbohydrates. If you go to the whole grain, such as a whole grain English muffin with a little bit of honey drizzled over it, or a whole grain bagel with some jam, that will raise serotonin levels, but it'll keep your blood sugar levels even at the same time. So you'll get the same mood boost without the blood sugar roller coaster.
And the blood sugar roller coaster is really the cravings, isn't it? It's, I guess, what could be called the munchies, is that in order to manage our mood, we can run to the carbohydrates, but we tend to run to the simple carbohydrates simply because they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. 90% of the stuff in the grocery store, we would be better off if it had never been developed in the first place. Yes, they're everywhere. One of the guidelines in the book that I have found to be most successful with the people that have followed my advice is always bring food with you. When you leave the house, pack your briefcase, your purse, your diaper bag, your gym bag, whatever it is you're carrying with your mood-boosting arsenal of foods, whether it's string cheese and whole grain crackers or yogurt or baby carrots or apples or whatever you want to bring, because you won't find mood-boosting foods readily available in the environment. And if you allow too many hours to go by between eating, you'll be so ravenous, you'll end up at a vending machine with the only option being the chips or the Snickers bar. So just bring your arsenal with you so that you can eat when you're comfortably hungry rather than ravenous, and stay in control of your appetite instead of it controlling you.
So that's one of the things we talked about with Dr. Schoenthaler, was what kind of foods you find out on the streets, and the closer you get to the inner city, the worse the food gets. And so it gets to a point where there's nothing but junk to eat, and thus, you consider that in the relationship to bad behavior and whatnot, and it kind of goes without saying that we're in big trouble in that regard. So the smartest thing you can do, according to Elizabeth Summers, bring your food with you and eat when you just start to become hungry instead of when you're ravenous. Is that a good one?
That's absolutely a wonderful. We have lots of research to show that if you stay in, you know, eating small meals and snacks throughout the day allows you to stay in control of your appetite, and then you make better decisions. You choose better foods and you eat fewer of them, as opposed to if you allow 5, 6, 7 hours to go by. By that time, you're ravenous. You'll choose all the wrong stuff and way too much.
What about sugar? Does sugar work with serotonin levels the same way carbohydrates do?
Oh, yeah. Well, that goes back to what I was saying before, mm-hmm. that the sugar will definitely raise your serotonin levels, but it wreaks havoc with your blood sugar. So that mm-hmm. your blood sugar level spikes, then it drops too low, and you end up riding this roller coaster of sugar highs and lows throughout the day as you pig out on junk food.
So sugar is like carbohydrates, only like worse.
Well, they're all carbohydrates. Sugar is a carbohydrate. Refined grains are mm-hmm. a carbohydrate. Even whole grains are a carbohydrate, but it's how those carbohydrates affect your blood sugar levels. And the whole grains will give you an even blood sugar level as opposed to the refined grains or the sugar.
So then it's really important to get carbohydrates right.
Oh, my gosh. They're the number one fuel for your brain. You know, following stupid Atkins diets, that's one of the reasons why they don't last long term. Sure, you can lose weight temporarily. You can lose weight on any diet, an all-sugar diet you can lose weight on. But keeping the weight off is the key, and you can't do it with a carb-free diet because carbohydrates are the basic fuel your body runs on. It's the number one fuel your brain needs, which is why I talk about in my 1-2-3 breakfast rules that, you know, you need some high-quality carbs in the morning to keep your brain functioning through the morning hours. The problem in our culture, of course, is that we're eating too much of the wrong kinds of carbs.
Okay, so when we get back, we're going to talk about just how to go about eating our way to happiness with Elizabeth Sommer, who is the author of Food for Mood and Eating Your Way to Happiness. So open the phones up, so if you'd like to ask Elizabeth some questions about diet and what to eat on our way to happiness, pick up your phones. We're at 831-479-1080 and 800-624-2665. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back. It's a fact. We can eat our way to happiness, and along the way, we can lose the extra weight and become lean and mean and happy and sleep well at night. Wow, I'm all for that, and I bet you are too. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Elizabeth Sommer, author of Food and Mood and Eat Your Way to Happiness. And you are there. Pick up your phone and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. The 10 secrets for eating our way to happiness. I'm all ready for this one. First, focus on real food, not junk food. We've all, of course, become aware of the dangers of junk food, but what are real foods, Elizabeth?
Real foods are foods that are as minimally touched by human hands as possible.
You find them in the middle of the grocery stores, right, in all those fancy boxes?
No, not quite. It's foods that grow on a plant or a tree or walk on 2 or 4 mm-hmm. feet or have fins.
mm-hmm.
So it's the broccoli, not the frozen broccoli with cheese sauce. It's the old-fashioned oatmeal, not the instant oatmeal with maple flavoring or the granola bar. It's the, it's the strawberry, not the strawberry-flavored potato chips.
So the closer you can get to the earth, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, the more you process a food, the lower its vitamin, mineral, phytonutrient, mm-hmm. and fiber content, and the higher its fat, salt, sugar, and calories. So the more you can go back to the foods on which we evolved, really, you mm-hmm. know, it's the foods that a hunter-gatherer would have found in the environment, then you're fueling your brain and your body with a fuel that it was designed to run on. And so we call those foods healthy foods these days, but in fact it's like the gasoline that you put into your car. You wouldn't put sawdust into your car and expect it to run right. So it's the same thing. You put the nutritional equivalent of sawdust into your body by eating foods that have nothing to do with the foods we evolved on. I mean, our diets today, the pilgrims wouldn't recognize our diets today, let alone our ancient ancestors.
Some gal this morning emailed me about a new food that's being put on the market in England called Cementex or something like that. Its slang term is gray goo. It's a nanoparticle food additive that tricks the tongue into thinking something is sweet. You can now make Coca-Cola, for example, without putting a sweetener into it. And I guess those are the kinds of foods we want to be really leery of, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Rule number two, follow the 1-2-3 rule at breakfast. You talk about a 1-2-3. One is what?
Well, we already talked about how important breakfast was. Mm-hmm. It boosts your mood and sustained energy. We even know that
if you want to sleep at night, eat a good breakfast.
That's right. Improves sleep. It helps not only with weight loss. I mean, like I mentioned before, anything can cause weight loss. It's maintaining the weight loss that's important, and we know that people that have been successful at weight loss, 9 out of 10 of them are eating breakfast every day. So we know it's very important for maintaining weight loss. But I'm not talking a donut and coffee here. Mm-hmm. You need to follow, like you just said, the 1-2-3 rule that I outline in the book. One, it needs a whole grain to provide the needed high-quality carbs for your brain during the morning hours.
And that high-quality carb is not going to break down immediately. It's going to break down over time so that as you go through your morning, you'll have food being released into the bloodstream as you need it.
And, yes, and it's those carbs that your brain is going to need to function on.
Mm-hmm.
That breakfast, though, also needs some protein in it to keep you satiated and to help maintain that even blood sugar level throughout the morning hours.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when people tell me that, oh, if I eat breakfast, I'm hungry all day, well, first off, you're supposed to be hungry on a regular basis, so that's not a problem. But usually, if they're immediately hungry, it's because they didn't include some protein in that breakfast. Maybe they had fruit and toast or something.
Mm-hmm. Or just simple carbohydrates, you know, some white toast and there you go.
You'd almost be better off not eating.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a whole grain is number one, a little bit of protein, number two, and then number three is you need one, preferably two colorful fruits or vegetables at that morning breakfast. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't want to hear...
What do they do?
Well, you need at least 8 servings a day of mm-hmm. colorful fruits and vegetables that we have identified, or researchers have.
So get almost, started right away.
Almost 1 million phytonutrients in colorful fruits and vegetables now that are important in protecting brain tissue from damage associated with not only depression but dementia and even Alzheimer's. And you need at least 8 a day. Well, if you don't spread them into, you know, at least 2 at every meal, you're going to end up at dinner saying, okay, well, I had an apple at lunch, so I need 7 fruits or vegetables for dinner.
Color is important.
And color, yes, because the antioxidants are in the color or in the pigment. So even if you're picking out a carrot, pick out the orangest carrot in the batch. And the more color, the more antioxidants. That's why blueberries have more antioxidants than, say, eggplant. Eggplant's colorful on the outside, but it's not colorful all the way through.
Well, it's easy for me to avoid eggplant, so there you go.
Well, especially for breakfast. Right?
Amen. So number three, choose quality carbs and reject the refined carb. I guess we've been talking about that all the way along, but the significance once again.
Well, again, because we know carbohydrates are very important. They help to raise serotonin levels, keep you in an even mood, provide the fuel your brain needs to function. But you want a carbohydrate that releases slowly into the bloodstream rather than one that spikes blood sugar. So
mm-hmm.
that's where the more you can get rid of the high. The other thing that's important here is that whole grains fill you up without filling you out. So you're less likely to gain weight on whole grains. Whereas refined grains, without the fiber in them, it's hard to feel satiated, so you tend to overeat them. So it's not only a mood issue, it's also a weight gain issue. The more you can get rid of the refined grains in your diet, the more likely it'll be not only to boost your mood, but also to help curb your waistline. And this is a tough one because the grocery stores are filled with junk food that say they have whole grains in them. You know, even a bread that says whole wheat bread, unless it says 100% whole wheat, you might as well assume that the first ingredient is wheat flour, which is white flour.
I'm getting the sense here from listening to you that in the case of food, white could be beautiful, but mostly it's not.
Oh, well, in my experience, life is almost entirely beautiful, but you have to take care of yourself to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Life is like an adult Disneyland. I mean, what a wonderful...
I meant white.
Oh, white.
White could be beautiful, but mostly...
Oh, I thought you said white.
You think about white flour, and when you have white bread, a piece of white toast, it's kind of like throwing a bucket of gasoline on the fire.
Oh.
You get this big whoosh. But in the case of our body, that the heat doesn't simply rise up into the sky. It goes into building more fat, right?
Well, if you eat, well, any calorie eaten in excess of what you need to maintain your normal activity level, yes, gets stored as body fat.
So there it is. And thus the real importance of choosing quality carbs and rejecting the refined stuff.
Right, because they also, not only are they better for you, will help boost your mood, are much higher in nutrients, but they also fill you up on fewer calories. So you're less likely to pack on the pounds.
I think we have a way, our bodies and our merchants of food have ways of tricking us into eating things that we shouldn't. And I guess we'll be talking about this next when we talk about using the 6% solution to rein in our sweet tooth. Then we are talking, of course, about eating our way to happiness with Elizabeth Sommer, who is the author of Food and Mood. Also, Eat Our Way, Your Way to Happiness. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. If you have questions for Elizabeth today, we'd love to hear them. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. And just how important is food to our mood? Can we eat our way to happiness? How do you go about eating your way to happiness? We will be right back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We can eat our way to happiness. It's a scientific fact. And Elizabeth Sommer knows the way. And she's telling us all about it today on The Food Chain with Michael Olson, your host. You can participate, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Elizabeth, how do we use the 6% solution to rein in all our sweet teeth? Man, we have so many desires for that sweetness. How do we rein that in?
Well, yes, and we've been sort of talking about this all along, about the trouble with sugar and how we already have all this brain chemistry.
Kind of sugar and carbohydrates, right?
Well, sugar being a carbohydrate,
yeah.
So
okay.
It's so easy to overconsume sweets. But you can still get your sweet fix without the blood sugar roller coaster, without compromising your waistline. I mean, there are all kinds of suggestions, lists of sweet indulgences.
What do you mean by the 6%?
You. Well, 6% rule, Americans are averaging about 100 to 150 pounds of sugar for every man, woman, and child every year in this country.
That's sweet.
Then that's just added sugar. I'm not talking about the natural sugars found in fruit or milk. That's more sugar than any human or any species has ever eaten in the history of the planet. It averages close to 500 calories a day of just a substance that supplies nothing but calories. And it averages about 20 to 25% of our daily calorie intake. So I recommend that we cut way back on sugar, not cut it out. You can still have, you know, the chocolate on occasion and the ice cream or whatever, but cut it down to 6% instead of 20 to 25%. What sort of warmed my heart is just recently after the book had been published and my recommendations for 6% had come out, the American Heart Association has come out. Finally, someone has stood up and said enough when it comes to sugar, and their recommendations are right in line with my 6% rule that we really need to cut back. But it's hard to do that because it's hard to know how much sugar is in a food. So read
just
labels.
The way I've done it at this time of year is cut out all sugar, and then if I get to 6%, it's okay.
Well, you know, there's so much sugar in foods that aren't even sweet.
I know. It's everywhere. Okay, so cut back on the sugar. That's
cut,
a duh.
Cut back on the sugar and read labels. If you, 4 grams of sugar is 1 teaspoon. So if you see something with 28 grams of sugar in it, that's what?
You're way out of line there.
Way out of line. And avoid any food that has sugar in the first 3 ingredients on the ingredient list. Or because manufacturers have gotten clever, they know that you know that if sugar's risen to the top, it's a high-sugar food.
Right.
So now what they're doing is adding several different sugars in smaller amounts, which buries the sugar farther down in the ingredient list.
Mm-hmm.
So if a product has sugar in the first 3 ingredients, put it back on the shelf. Or if it has numerous sugars throughout the ingredient list,
Same thing.
It back on the shelf.
Okay, sprinkle the diet every day with a few super mood foods. What are super mood foods?
Well, you know, I get asked all the time, what should I eat mid-afternoon to boost my energy level or boost my brain power? And it's the number one question I get in the food and mood topic. And it's this isn't about one food. There's no Band-Aid approach to this. Mm-hmm. You can't throw blueberries into a fast food diet and think you're going to feel better. You need to follow the 1-2-3 rule for breakfast. You need to eat the 75% rule of real foods throughout the day. You need to cut back on your sugar. All that said,
Right. Then
if you sprinkle that diet with a few of the superfood foods I discuss in the book that are super high in antioxidants.
Examples?
Four examples would be berries, dried tart cherries, nuts, colorful dark orange produce, or citrus like oranges, grapefruit, limes, lemons, dark green vegetables like spinach, for instance, kale, broccoli, those things. If you sprinkle those into the already decent diet, you'll just get sort of an extra nutritional bang for your buck.
There you go. And then next one, include more mood-boosting fats. We talked about the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. Where do we get them?
You get them, you know, there's three omega-3s, and they're not all created equal. The omega-3 ALA that you get in flaxseed, walnuts, soy, is great for lowering your risk for heart disease. It will do nothing to boost your mood or your memory.
Ah.
So you need the other two omega-3s, the EPA and DHA, that you get from salmon, mackerel, herring, sardines, to get a significant improvement in mood. I mean, the research on DHA is so strong that even the American Psychiatric Association now recommends that anybody battling depression, no matter what therapy they're using, should augment that with supplements or increased intake of the omega-3s.
Accent the positive by taking the right supplements.
Well, back to that DHA, mm-hmm. Not only a good moderate dose multiple vitamin and mineral is good, but if you're not going to get enough DHA from salmon, mackerel, herring, if you're not going to get enough DHA from sustainable algae-based fortified foods that have that DHA in it, then get a supplement of DHA. You need at least 220 milligrams a day. So it's either a fish oil capsule or a DHA capsule that has that much DHA in it, as well as the multi, as well as, you know, a calcium magnesium supplement to fill in the gaps on the days when you don't get enough milk or fortified mm-hmm. soy milk and magnesium-rich foods.
So keep close track so that you know what you're getting and what you're not getting, and then supplement as you go along.
Yeah, you know, and almost everybody should be supplementing. I mean, ideally, you go to food first. I wish everyone was eating perfectly. But according to the most recent national nutrition surveys, less than 1 out of 100 Americans are meeting even the minimum standards of a balanced diet. So even if you think you're doing pretty well, you're probably not doing as well as you think.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, to fill in the gaps, a moderate dose multi, a DHA supplement, 220 milligrams at least, you know, a calcium magnesium pill. Then, of course, there's some other ones that I talk about in the book, like Sam E, if you're battling depression.
And then there's more. When we get back, treating ourselves to the right food vices. We're a few minutes left and so much to cover. Right back. Do stay tuned with Elizabeth Summer, Michael Olson on The Food Chain, Eating Our Way to Happiness. Eating Our Way to Happiness with Elizabeth Summer and Michael Olson, yours truly on The Food Chain. Last three tips: treat yourself to a few of the right food vices. Why should we treat ourselves to food vices?
Well, this is the most...
You're talking about chocolate, right?
Yes. You know, we've talked about how our brains are hardwired to love sweet and creamy foods, and we have no brain chemistry to crave, you know, the spinach. But the good news is there really are a few foods that are naughty and nice. Chocolate, dark chocolate, which is the number one most craved food in this country.
Not milk chocolate, chocolate.
No, not milk chocolate, not chocolate ice cream, not, you know, the little chocolate creams. It's got to be dark chocolate. It's packed with antioxidant-rich compounds called flavonoids that protect brain tissue and prevent blood clots associated with stroke. But you've got to choose dark chocolate that is at least 70% cocoa powder.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're making your chocolate dessert at home, avoid the Dutch processed cocoa, since the processing destroys the antioxidants. So you really just need the 100% cocoa powder.
Okay. Next is drink the right beverages in the right quantity.
Yeah, well, this particular vice is the red wine vice.
Yay, everybody says yay. Yeah.
It not only has 20 times the antioxidants of white wine, but it also contains the compound resveratrol, that is being research is showing helps to reduce the risk for dementia, mm-hmm. and may have a similar effect on that calories restriction has on extending lifespan. So there's some really good stuff with resveratrol.
And soda pops not being the right beverage, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer.
And finally, last but certainly not least, end the day with the right meal.
Keep your evening meal light. We know that, of course, you know, anybody that's just finished up with Thanksgiving, that a great big fatty, huge meal may make you groggy, but it actually interferes with a good night's sleep. It reduces a type of sleep called REM sleep, rapid mm-hmm. eye movement sleep, where you do a lot of dreaming. And people that don't get enough REM sleep tend to wake up more frequently, have a more restless kind of sleep. So that you wake up in the morning and you're tired, and now all of a sudden you're drinking coffee, you're trying to stay awake, and you're certainly not that eat your way to happiness.
So, back into the cycle of craziness.
Yeah,
keep
that evening meal light and low fat, and then about an hour, half an hour to an hour before bedtime, have a light all-carb snack.
Maybe wait a minute, but you've been talking about avoiding those carbohydrates, but now we're talking about what kind of carbohydrate?
Well, but it's the we've been talking about eating quality carbs, the whole grains, because a whole grain all carb snack, such as a couple of cups of Air Pop popcorn, or half an English muffin with some honey on it, a whole grain English muffin will raise levels of serotonin, and when serotonin levels are high, you sleep better.
So you can drug yourself to sleep with good food. And you can ruin your sleep with bad food.
Yeah.
Hey, Elizabeth Summer, something tells me you make a good dancer. I don't know what it is. But I love to dance. I sure enjoyed this program, and I sure enjoyed the... I like the idea of eating our way to happiness. And you know, folks, I just think, looking around it, we've been trying to eat our way to happiness, but we've been eating all at all the wrong places. So if we just think about how we eat, maybe we truly can eat our way to happiness. Michael Olson, Food Chain, thank you all so much for tuning in. Back next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.